track session number 10734, Reel 2.
Mr. Remington, Reel 2. You were telling me how the the resolution was different.
Well, it was a much older. It hadn't been dished up into modern. It was a terrible old ship. The bathrooms was terrible. There was below the water line, and you had ejectors to drain the water out, and then they never seemed to work. So you was washing in up to your waist in mucky water all the time. It was a terrible ship to be on. I didn't like the resolution. But I only brought it back from America to Devonport, and then I left her in Devonport and came back to Chatham Barracks.
Were there any other ways in which the resolution was uncomfortable?
Well, it had a coal galley, so the boys had to ump coal up from the bilges to the galley every day for the cooks to cook the dinner, and the galleys wasn't the best of things, because they was old fashioned, see, being coal galleys, so we never had a baked potato all the time we was on there. And it was all boily. Everything was boiled. It wasn't a very good ship. It wasn't the one of the best I was on.
You transferred from the Resolution to
We come home to the barracks, and then I was an able seaman then. So I went down in the torpedo school and qualified for torpedoman. And then I went to the Anson. Went to HMS Anson. That was being built in Swan and Unders on the Tyne, so I stood by that a few months while they was finished building it, and then we took her to Rosyth and commissioned, and then we ended up in Scapa Flow with the Home Fleet. So I'd done a lot of swinging around the buoy in Scapa and Valford in Iceland, and we'd done the Russian convoys, escorted for Russian convoys.
And what was the Anson like?
That was brand new. It was modern to what we'd been used to. We had good galleys and that was a fairly good ship.
But what were the facilities like?
There was lots of us on there, so we was all ships were cramped, so we didn't have a lot of living space. But it was probably better living than the war spite, but being more modern than the war spite was.
Was the food any different?
The food wasn't. We was what they call general messing on all big ships. The destroyers not used to have to feed themselves and get their own food ready, but on battleships it was always general messing. So the food was reasonable. Yeah, probably we was on bigger rations than the people ashore, and we always had nice white bread where everybody else was eating this old brown bread or this. But we always had white bread because the flour that they used ashore wouldn't keep, so they used to have white bread on chips. So we always had a nice white bit of red bread for our tea, and the food was reasonable. Yeah, the food was reasonable.
What are your memories of the Russian convoys on the Anson?
Well, we used to run out of fuel. We used to start off with these from Iceland. We used to start escorting these big. We probably never saw the convoy. We'd be miles from the convoy, but we was the covering for the convoy. And then, just when they needed us, we'd be run out of fuel, and we'd have to go. We'd be going back, and then the Germans had set about them. So, I don't think we ever done a lot of good on the battleships on the Russian convoys. The destroyers took the cane. Took all the worst up there. The destroyer boys, they had a rough ride, and the men on the merchant ships. They was worse off than we was. But we always seem to be running out. Always seem to run out of fuel and have to go back when we really ought to have been there.
How many Arctic convoys did you do?
Probably four or five, because we used to seem to be stuck in Iceland and different places to stop the Germans coming out. And when they did come out, we wasn't there. The one good one was the Prince of Wales or somebody, Fraser. He had about the only one of the KG5s that had a real good do up there. He met some German ships up there and had a good do, but we never saw. I don't think the Anson fired an angry shot during the war. I don't think she fired, because she ended up out in the Far East. But I think she went all through the war without firing an angry shot, the Anson. See, we used to always be, see, when I've done about 18 months on it, I've been scapper and that, and we always used to seem as if we was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Yeah, never. I don't think the Anson fired an angry shot all the war. And that was with Russian convoys as well.
And you're on the Anson in 42, 43?
42, 43, yes. And then I went, left the Anson, I came back and to the barracks again, and then I qualified to LTO, leading torpedo operator. And then...
You mentioned Iceland.
Yes, we was in...
Did you go ashore at Reykjavik?
No, there was... They used to run a boat to Reykjavik, but I never went to Reykjavik. The destroyer used to take you there, but I was in a Sadiesfjord. I went ashore in Sadiesfjord, but the people, they wasn't allowed to talk to you. The girls got their hair shaved off if they spoke to English matlows. Yeah, we'd done a bit of shopping. I went been ashore shopping, and you know, they'd serve you because they was taking your money, but they didn't like the English. We wasn't liked at all.
Did they show that they didn't like you?
Yeah, they just wouldn't. They wouldn't speak to you. Just only say, you know, just serve you, and that was it. You wouldn't. They didn't set about you or anything like that. But they didn't. They just didn't want us there. See, we just got there before the Germans, and that it may depend. They didn't like that.
Do you think it was because they were pro-German?
I think they was. They didn't like it. I think the Americans got on better. The Americans was there, and I think they got on better than the English people.
Why should that have been?
I don't know. Probably had more money. They spent money everywhere they went, didn't they? They had more money than us.
Did you see any of these girls with their head shaved?
No, just heard of it. But that's what they wouldn't speak. You couldn't speak to them.
Which ship did you say that you joined after the Anson?
Tyler, the American frigate, captain class frigate. And I was torpedoman on there. That was for Atlantic convoys, escorts, and that they was loaded with depth charges. We was a escort ship, and I was in charge of the torpedo party on there for the depth charges.
So it was called the United States ship.
No, it was a HMS Tyler. HMS Tyler. They built lots of them for us.
So all the crew was British?
Yes. The first 6 weeks was the best on there because it was all American food. When we went out to American food, we had to go on to English food.
Can you tell me about the armament of the ship and so on?
Well, we had 120 depth charges on the upper deck, and we had an hedgehog that fired the fired projectiles over the bows of the ship, and we had a pump. We had an American 4-inch low angle gun and a few Orlikans. That's probably what would be on there. It was to look after the convoy. See, so depth charges were the main armament on the frigates. We had four throwers, two throwers either side for throwing the depth charges wide, and two rails for dropping, because we used to drop them in patterns of 10, drop patterns of 10 at a time on the U-boats.
What was it like crossing the Atlantic in a frigate?
Terrible. Yeah, we came over with... we used to pick them up in Boston. They was being built in America, but you joined them in Boston and then done a rubbing up period in Casca Bay. It's the American scapper flow. There's nothing there. It's out in the wilds, and we done it. And then we brought over. We came over with the stag, and the waves. There must have been 60 and 70 foot waves because we only used to see the stag every now and again. You know, we'd be down in a trough, and they was terrible sea ships, and we had bunks instead of hammocks, so we used to have to tie ourselves in. So we didn't like the American ships.
Was this just because it was a small ship?
Yes, they wasn't very big. They wasn't 600 or 700 tonne. They wasn't very big ships. And they was fairly good ships at sea. They was fairly dry. You know, they rode the... They didn't dive under the wave. They seemed to rode the sea well.
Could the galley be used? Did you get hot food?
Yes, we had hot food mostly. We had hot food. Yeah, we had hot food mostly. I don't remember being on hard tack. I don't remember having biscuits and that. I think we nearly always had a good cooked meal on there.
But everything was new about the ship, wasn't it?
This was a new ship again, yeah. See, I was lucky. I had the Anson, a new ship, and the Tyler was a new, but it was all American. We used to have to do a special course in Eastbourne. We'd done a special course for the American ships, because they was... See, the torpedoman looked after the electrics on the ship, so the electrics on the frigates was 110. We was been used to 240 or 250 volts on the English, but they was AC and all DC. We was in English ships, but the American ships was AC, so we had to go and learn a fair bit before we went to these frigates. But we thought they used to call us the D-Day Dodgers, because we used to go to America to... We was going to America to pick these up, and you could be out there months waiting for a ship. So we thought we'd be out there and miss D-Day, but we didn't. We got the Tyler, didn't we? Got back in time for the D-Day landings.
Were you hoping that you'd miss D-Day?
Yeah, we didn't. We was in America with big eats and good drink and lights and everything in America. You didn't want to come back here to black eats. Yeah, we enjoyed America. Well, I was only there a week. I thought we'd going to be out there months, but... Some people was, but I was one of the unlucky ones. I arrived in New York on one Saturday, and we went down to... We had two hotels down in New Jersey. They took over two big hotels for the Navy, and I was there the first night I got there. They say, you can't go ashore tonight, it's your first night. The next day I get to draft it, you can't go ashore tonight, it's your last night. So I didn't get to run ashore in New Jersey. And I went up to Boston, and we arrived in Boston about 4 o'clock. And there's a big naval, it's the American naval barracks they used to put us in. And they said when you got there, you can't go ashore the first night. See, so the next morning we was on the ship up to Casco Bay. So I didn't get to run ashore in Boston. So we'd done about 4 weeks in Casco Bay doing the rubbing up period, learning the ship, and then we come back to Boston. There was a couple of snags, so we had to go back to Boston. And I think we was there a week, so I did get to run ashore in Boston before I came back to England. But I was only in America about a week to get to run ashore, and the rest of the time we was in Casco Bay where we couldn't get ashore. So I wasn't one of the D-Day Dodgers.
What did you do ashore in Boston?
Well, it was good, because they looked at the American people was... They was really, you know, they looked after you real well. You didn't matter where you went, you'd get a drink and that. And we went to all the we used to run in the burlesques. They had the burlesques was going them days, so we used to have good theatre dues.
What is a burlesque?
Well, it's like the hippodromes used to be in England. It's where they have all the different artists. You know, they used to call it the burlesque.
Like
a bit of striptease and that. They used to be on the stage in them days. And so we used to have a good drink.
So the Americans were...
They were good, yeah. Yes. The West Coast was best. When I arrived on the West Coast on the war site, that was... They was different. So they more looked out. But they'd never seen English sailors, see? And the English sailors had messed it up for himself on the East Coast, so there wasn't, you know, it wasn't quite so nice on the East Coast as it was on the West Coast.
How had they messed it up?
Well, getting drunk, chasing the women, drinking the beer, fighting. They weren't all good boys.
On the Atlantic convoys, did you come across enemy U-boats or aeroplanes very much?
Yeah, we didn't see it. The Fokker Walsh used to come over, and so the submarines knew where we was, but we done a fair bit of depth charging. We sunk a submarine off Pembroke. Pembroke Docks in Wales. We sunk a submarine off there with the Blythe. It's in the history books that the Tyler and the Blythe sunk. The number of it's there, 170 U-176 or something. So we got one submarine, but we done months and months at sea without sinking anything or without seeing anything, because we didn't used to see the convoys. We was in escort groups, so they used to be spread all out over the Atlantic, so we didn't see a lot of convoys. But we done a lot of depth charging, but the Aztecs wasn't all that good, and we probably used to depth charge more rubbish than we did U-boats.
Can you describe what it was like when you got the U-boat?
I didn't know till I read an history book. Didn't know till I read it in an history book that it didn't register that we had sunk one. It was just before D-Day when we was going around getting ready to go around to get in the south coast to get ready for going over to D-Day.
So nothing came to the surface.
No, I didn't remember. Didn't even see anything about it. No.
And the rest of the crew didn't know that. Well,
as I say, I read it in an history book. A chap lent me the book, and I've got the dates and everything in a bit of paper that the Blythe and Tyler sunk a U-boat. I might have been having my dinner at the time.
So if the Tyler didn't have torpedoes, what exactly was your job aboard the Tyler?
Well, that was the torpedo and depth charges was his job. He had you done electrics, mines, and depth charges. That was your job as a torpedo man. You looked after whatever was, if there's torpedoes on the ship, you could have been looking after the torpedoes. But as I say, I was only looked after torpedoes in after the war. The only ship I didn't ever ship with torpedoes during the war. I was on, see, the battleships didn't have any torpedoes, and the Yankee frigates had no torpedoes, so I was on them till the war ended. I finished up the war on the Yankee frigates, so I didn't have a torpedo. I didn't look after a torpedo until after the war, and then I had two or three ships with torpedoes there.
So, if you got the order to fire the depth charges, what exactly would you do?
Well, I was in charge of the crew, in charge of the depth charge crew. So I'd just shout out fire, and the boys would fire, and then reload. The throwers had to be reloaded again, so they'd just reload ready for the next do. So it was just looking after the. There was a fair bit of maintenance on depth charges. So there was plenty of work to do, and fitting the pistols and the primers. It was a full time job looking after depth charges during the wartime, and making sure they were safe when they wasn't going to be fired. Because if you went down with a depth charge set, you always knew that they blow you to smithereens if your depth charges were set to fire. You know, if you only had them set to fire when you was attacking a U-boat, you always kept them safe otherwise.
Were Atlantic convoys boring or interesting?
No, it was real boring, because we used to do 30 days at sea and 7 days in harbour. So you was wandering and wallowing and running around. No, it was really boring. That was the worst part of it. It was the boring part of it, because you was 4 hours on and 4 hours off all the time, and it was just nothing to do. We used to have, when you got a depth charge, when you got a ping on the Asdics, you know, it livened things up. So, and there was lots of that, but it wasn't a very good job looking after convoys.
How close to the convoys were you normally on the
Tyler? We very seldom see the convoys, because we was the 5th escort group. So we used to be, they had these escort groups all over the Atlantic just to keep the submarines away from the convoys. If you could, you'd want to keep them away from the convoy. So that's our job. We very seldom saw a convoy.
Were you in fear that you might meet a German raider much more powerful than yourself?
No, because they'd got nothing left when we was at sea on convoys. No, it was just U-boats we was fighting. We wasn't worried at all. Never used to think about a big ship at all.
Were you ever fired at by a U-boat?
Well, after the war, I was sent on the day the war ended. We were supposed to go to sea to start another patrol, and then if the war stopped, so instead of going to sea on another patrol, they sent us to sea to pick up U-boats. They was all ordered to surface and fly a big black flag. So we used to go out and fetch them, boarding parties, and fetch them in from the Atlantic, and then after that we used to fetch them over from Oslo and in Norway, big groups of them, and we fetched one U-boat. And the captain used to come aboard the Tyler, but the crew used to stop on the ship. What crew was left on the ship? Steaming party, to steam it over. And this captain, when he was told that he was on HMS Tyler, and he said, "Well, in my logbook," he said, "I've got you." He was going to. He didn't fire at us because we run over him, and we took his periscope off. And this was a U-boat captain was telling our captain that he'd had. Must have been at the same time as we was got the one. It said it was off Milford Haven, so it must have been about the same time as we got the submarine. But we took his Air Asdic guy took his periscope off, so he had pennant numbers on the side, so he'd got the Tyler's pennant numbers, and he told the captain that he'd had us inside, and we run him down, didn't know he was there.
So when you were rounding up these U-boats at the end of the war, did you have much contact with the German sailors?
Well, yeah, I was boarding party, so they used to go over to Kristiansand or Oslo, and then six or seven of us used to go over onto the U-boats, and we used to bring about six or seven over at a time, like an escort, couple of escort ships, and bring them over to somewhere in Scotland, some lock in Scotland, where we used to take the food and torpedoes out of them, and then they was put on big old hulks as prison ships, and then we used to take them to Lissahalley near Londonderry, down the river from Londonderry, a place called Lissahalley, and there was dozens and dozens there all tied up alongside each other, and then after that they took them in the Atlantic and pulled the plugs out and sunk them all in the Atlantic. So I had 4 or 5 months on U-boats.
This was in the summer of 45.
This was, yeah, when the war ended, yes.
What kind of impression did you get of the submariners on the U-boats?
They was all very young. I wasn't very old, but they was all younger than me, because they'd all their old crews had been working. There was very few old men amongst them, very few old men at all on the submarines. But they were sick as pigs, because they'd never give up. Them U-boat boys had never give up. They didn't want to pack up. The people would give up for them, and they was really cut up about it. And some of the captains was real hard cases, you know, real Nazis. We had a couple that wouldn't do this and wouldn't do that. So they just put somebody else on the ship to bring them over. They was real hard Nazis. Some of them was, but we couldn't speak to them because we didn't know their language. But they wasn't. They didn't try and talk to you at all. They knew they'd been sold to the they'd been sold out. They didn't want to pack up.
But would they be surly towards you or friendly?
They just ignored you. I think they just ignored you. They didn't want to know you was there.
But would they do what you asked them to do?
Yes. Yeah. I don't think there was any trouble at all bringing them over and. Well, as soon as they got over this side, they was all taken off the U-boats and put in these prison ships.
So you didn't have any conversation?
No, I don't remember talking to any of them. Because they was like us, didn't speak the language. Language barriers was always the same.
Now, you were telling me earlier that you were at D-Day on the Tyler. What are your memories of that?
Well, we was all hyped up to be bombed and machine gunned and everything, and that first morning we landed with the British beach, and we didn't see any trouble at all, or hardly anything at all. We took four big liners from Gravesend, from Southend, down through the Channel that night, and landed. They was the first ones, the big ones, to be over there for the troops to land, but we didn't see any trouble at all on the D-Day morning over there.
We were just on escort work.
Yeah, escort. Then we'd done that. We used to pick up two train ferries from New Haven every night and take two over and bring two back in the morning. And we'd done that for a few months, escorting these troops over the old train ferries. They used to load them with troops, and we'd done that every night. Took them. We used to lay in ride off Isle of Wight in the daytime, and then go up to New Haven in the evening and take them over. So we only used to go over in the night time. We didn't see a lot of action at all, not after D-Day.